Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host for today, Aaron Dykes. It is Wednesday, September 26th, 2012.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, EPA sued over illegal experimentation on human subjects. David Ortiz sits down with Tom Woods to discuss NDAA and more. The October InfoWars magazine discusses the technocracy takeover. And InfoWars reporters meet camera-shy NSA agents. All that and more coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Tonight, in a shocking but true speech segment beating the drums towards war, we find a member of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy essentially calling for the U.S. to launch a provocation to start a war with Iran. This is a pro-Israeli lobby and a think tank represented annually at Bilderberg. As unbelievable as this is, it is very much par for the course. It is Director of Research for YNAP, Patrick Clausen, listed a raft of historical examples where there were staged or exploited attacks used to take us to war. Among them was the Gulf of Tonkin incident, the USS Maine, the sinking of the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, and Fort Sumner from the Civil War, all staged in their own way. And he essentially dubbed this pattern as the traditional way in which America goes to war. He further added, He further told his hawkish audience, quote, "We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians, and we could get nastier about it," and essentially called for all this to be escalated. He referred to Iran submarines going down and more. It's crazy. It's incredible. It is totally us going hot for war. Let's play some of those clips now and analyze them.
One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We can do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just suggesting that this is not a either-or proposition. It's just sanctions has to succeed or other things. We are in the game of using,
and of course you see this audience laughing through what many analysts expect could be an extremely devastating war that they say could drag us into a full-blown World War III. Now, Clausen's semi-nude terroristic threats are on the heels of his experience at other terroristic organizations known as the IMF and the World Bank. So what do you expect? But at the same time, we've discussed at length at InfoWars how an October surprise is in the cards. It's being considered. It's in the poker hand. It's being looked at again and again as an ace card, knowing that if it's played right, if the game is played properly, it could get them exactly what they want. This is all tied in with statements from former Senator Gary Hart, who circa 2007 wrote a, quote, mock letter to Iran warning them about Americans' history of using false flags to start wars. It's on the heels of scores of Obama advisors calling for new Oklahoma cities, for new 9/11 attacks, all to get Obama reelected or to get America engaged in another terrible war adventure that many of the people in Washington and other parts of the power play of the Anglo-American sector would like to see put in place. So very disgusting, and unfortunately our population is all too likely to just repeat mantras like support our troops and never really think about how or why we got to war, even though you nakedly have people calling for provocation to start a war on phony pretext. It's disgusting, but it's happening. There's that clip. In related news, you have Iranian press TV journalist Maya Nasser killed, apparently assassinated by the U.S.-backed Free Syrian Army rebels, just as he was reporting on twin explosions near the Syrian capital, bombs that were so big and underreported that they really don't seem like they could have been done just by random rebels running around with automatic rifles. And this same journalist has been critiquing Israel's role in pushing for airstrikes against Syria. He's been critical of the West in many ways. Now he's dead, very suspicious. That will surely come out, or maybe it'll be forgotten. Who knows? In health news, there's other shockwaves coming from the recent GMO study linking rats to cancer after eating GM corn. Russia is now saying it will suspend the import and use of American GM corn following that study, which brought up causes of breast cancer, liver, kidney damage, and of course it's also been linked to infertility. All the experts just laugh about it and say we need that depopulation. They are saying this could trigger a diplomatic and commercial row with the U.S. and the West. Well, good. If the illegitimate United States of Monsanto falls, that's really in everyone's advantage. They've hijacked several of the past administrations, Bush and Quayle, openly pushing for Monsanto to be cleared on those regulations. It came out also today that Romney, while at Bain Capital, helped polish Monsanto's image and launch their era of biotechnology. Obama is completely bought out and has bowed to GMO interests. You've got Michael Taylor still currently at the head of food safety at the FDA, and they won't label this food. So good if these countries stop importing it. Russia's not the only country. It's probably just the most flagrant example. Canada has said they're now going to investigate this GM corn, do a study on it. France has said that. The European Food Safety Authority has said they're going to look into it. And other countries probably will and should. We should get this stuff off the market. It's known to be dangerous, but they're shoving it down our throats anyway, literally. Meanwhile, a new story on the history of human experimentation going on in the modern day hasn't even stopped yet. The EPA now being sued over basically shoving diesel fumes down people's throats to do a study on the dangerousness of emissions from cars. It is specifically a particle matter known as PM2.5 that the EPA has already considered deadly. In fact, Lisa Jackson, head of the EPA, testified in Congress that this particulate matter causes premature death and blames it for 1 in 4 U.S. deaths, attributing it to PM2.5. And yet the agency she heads is doing experiments on elderly people who are already ill and other human test subjects who were not properly informed about what was being put into their bodies, not properly informed about the dangers. And so they're testing on humans. Seems crazy, seems unbelievable, but it's really going on. What do you expect? Lisa Jackson cut her teeth and rose to power as the chief of staff for John Corzine. So, you know. But anyway, Alex had on the show today the director of the American Tradition Institute Environmental Law Center, who have initiated this lawsuit. David W. Schneer was on the program to discuss this new terrifying example at length. He's directing that lawsuit, or at least advising on it, and that will come out in future reports, I'm sure, as it develops, but really bombshell information. And you've got to put this in perspective with the official disclosures that the U.S. has tested on human subjects in this country hundreds and hundreds of times. It's openly sprayed chemicals, pollutants, all kinds of things on entire cities. It's taken members of the military, subjected them to the test. Many people died, took other vulnerable populations, whether it's religious minorities or ethnic minorities, subjected them to tests. The U.S. does this. We investigated ourselves at the congressional level and found hundreds and hundreds of endless, horrible examples of this stuff. So we shouldn't be surprised, and we should shine a light on this new case and try to hold them accountable, as they were trying to apparently prove how horrible cars are and get us out of our cars. Well, it's much worse if you commit suicide with it. Now, in the next segment, we take the extremely poignant and serious analysis, social commentary, really, from Jeff Foxworthy about American culture, and we kind of turn it on ourselves. How do you know if you are a conspiracy theorist? Well, tonight, we could tell you that you might be a conspiracy theorist if you're capable of critical thinking, if you distrust the mainstream media, if you think about WTC Building 7, if you think drones in America might not be for Al-Qaeda, if you think you have a right to protest, if you think there's essentially no important difference between Republicans and Democrats, if you think the Constitution itself is not a terrorist act, if you think the right to bear arms is not just for hunting, if you don't want a bunch of tyrannical thugs overriding you. If you think rich and powerful, connected people should be held to the rule of law and go to jail if they commit crimes, i.e. J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, if you are aware just of the fact that Homeland Security bought 1.2 billion rounds of ammunition and are kind of concerned about it, if you think about the Federal Reserve or about Monsanto's GMO corn or a host of other issues, re-education camps, if you think at all, if you think at all, you just might be a conspiracy theorist. That's a public service announcement here at Infowars.com. We just want to try to realize the craziness we're involved in here today. And how dare you if you think you might be a terrorist too. I'm sure that's the next segment. Meanwhile, bit of media analysis. Steve Watson found this in the UK while analyzing some magazines. Geoengineering and New World Order pushed on the sleeping sheeple. Of course, their propaganda, their symbolism is everywhere. It's the kind of terms they say we're crazy and conspiracy theorists for if we bring them up and talk about them. And yet they're put on the front pages of magazines and stores all across the globe. And that's what they want to do. They want to populate our minds with the terms they define in their senses, but take away from those terms and turn them on their head if we try to point out what's really going on. Just a small example of the bigger picture there. Now turning to the TSA, they've done a string of abuses. There should be really an American revolution just against the TSA agency alone. So therefore, we're calling for a new opt-out and film the TSA campaign to take place during the November travel week this year in 2012, the busiest travel season of all, so we could draw the most attention to this, hopefully nationally, if not globally, because the TSA have implanted themselves in foreign countries as well. Now, this happened in 2010. People organized a protest. They said they were going to refuse to go through the body scanners and opt out, and the TSA panicked. They freaked out, and they shut down body scanners all across the country. I personally traveled that week and saw that it was the case, so that people could not demonstrate the right to opt out and get other sheeple in the public to pay attention to what's going on. We're not going to let that happen this year, especially as they've increased their tyranny moment by moment, week to week. Now they're testing drinks that are bought after the security point for supposed explosive residue. They're never going to stop. They're not going to stop. And that's, and now they're telling people it's illegal to film in different places. None of that's true. You have a legal right to film what the TSA is doing. We have a legal right to criticize them and hold them accountable and explain when the TSA blog from blogger Bob, an anonymous person, is telling lies about how they're going to stop molesting children at the checkpoints and everything else, lying about the radiation clusters that have popped up in Boston, Logan, and other airports of TSA employees themselves. All this is the terrible things we need to see stopped. And for these reasons and so much more, not to mention the violation of our Fourth Amendment under the Bill of Rights, we are calling for a nationally organized campaign to opt out and film the TSA. We're surely going to talk about this more as the events lead up to the week of November. But keep that in mind. If you have travel plans, think about how to incorporate your statement against the TSA. Maybe it's just wearing an InfoWars t-shirt that says stop the TSA. We have those available. Maybe it's a homemade t-shirt you're going to make. Maybe it's just you filming someone else opting out of going through the scanners. Or maybe it's just posting blogs and stories. Maybe something on planetinfowars.com. Whatever you do, we better hold them accountable because they're trying to subject us all to biometrics. They're trying to stop travel. They're trying to keep people who are critical of the TSA from traveling. They've already got their blacklist going, and it is growing. All this and more. Just think about that stuff. With that in mind, we have a new edition, the second edition of InfoWars magazine, and it is spectacular. I don't know if you have a document shot, but it's there in the OTS as well, of this amazing cover with the hierarchical pyramid, the HAL, all-seeing eye, symbolizing the rise of the robots and their takeover of humanity against this backdrop of skulls. This is part of our exclusive issue on the end of humanity, the rise of robots. Alex Jones has crystallized what's been years of ranting about this subject into a concise and intelligent article. We've got other articles. Will humanity survive the singularity? There's other stories in here, too, but it's really a focused issue on one of the biggest questions of our time, and that is the cheapening of humanity, that is the reducing us in eugenics terms to almost next to nothing and planning for our complete obsolescence. The elite don't see themselves as part of our human species. They see themselves as a better and separate entity. They're hoping to merge with robots, and I'm not just talking out of nowhere about this. This is all based in fact. Ray Kurzweil, Bill Joy, other top technocratic elites have discussed this at length, whether to kill us all or keep us as pets, and they're leaning towards the former, all while these drones are coming to the forefront, spreading everywhere, all while these different DARPA-developed robots are gaining speed on humans, taking over, prepared to serve warrants, prepared to kill humans in the face of battle. Warfare is shifting to a technocratic model where there's not a human intermediary. We showed yesterday the tank footage of the guy at Tiananmen Square who got those tanks to stop. That's because a human inside that tank realized he couldn't live with himself if he took the Chinese authoritarian orders and ran that guy over. So instead he stopped and recognized the human on the other end of his gun barrel. That's why that poignant and touching episode occurred. They're taking those humans out of the equation. It's going to be robots serving the powers of war. And that's just part of the reason why we have such an important issue ahead of us. You need to get this out to people, use this as a platform to raise this issue with people, and we need to spread the word and have a real conversation about this. Do people even know what DARPA is, how they work with the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, how they've taken over our policy? How they want us eradicated? I can't just go on and on about this, but it's an incredible issue. It's available. You can get a subscription to all these magazines for $59.95 per year, or you can buy them individually at $7.95. That helps us recoup the cost. We begin implemented them around the city of Austin, and we're going to later spread them across the rest of the country in different locales. So an exciting new development at InfoWars. On top of the powerful information in this issue, the artwork itself is incredible and extremely professional. We've hired new graphic designers just to deal with that. And so you can check that out at the InfoWarsShop.com. Also the InfoWars store link from InfoWars.com. So we turn now to our quote of the day. It's from Napoleon Bonaparte. Among those who dislike oppression are many who like to oppress. Words to think about. Why is it? You weren't ready for that? Among those who dislike oppression are many who like to oppress. Important words to think about from Napoleon Bonaparte. We'll be back after this with more on the InfoWars Nightly News. Stay tuned, and don't forget to support us at PrisonPlanet.tv and start your own InfoWar at PlanetInfoWars.com.
Hello, this is Linda West with a special report for InfoWars.com. A new DVD has come out by GMO expert and scholar Jeffrey Smith. It's entitled Genetic Roulette. It exposes the shockingly unbelievable connection between the proliferation of GMOs by huge agri-corporations and the huge increase in disease in America.
Things we're seeing today aren't normal. We didn't see them 30 years ago or 50 years ago.
Illnesses that weren't epidemic before are now epidemic.
With this new comprehensive information, we can finally solve the mystery between the rising disease, cancer, allergies, Alzheimer's, premature aging, and even autism.
I'm concerned about all the health issues that I'm seeing. But the one that I am most alarmed about is autistic spectrum, which is literally skyrocketed.
We can't say for sure that GMOs have anything to do with autism, but we can't say for sure that it doesn't. In fact, there's been an increase in autism since GMOs were introduced, and animals that eat GMOs, both in laboratory and in livestock situations, have shown some telltale signs that some practitioners say are linked with autism.
Jeffrey Smith has done the scientific research that finally reveals the truth about GMOs that big agri-corps and the government has tried so hard to cover up. This food conspiracy is making them billionaires and us sick.
He said he lost about 90% of his miniature steers. What the problem was is I guess he said that they weren't able to process the food correctly and they would bloat up and die from it.
Now that we have the real information, we can make changes. Now we know exactly why diseases are on the rise, surgeries are on the rise, and so many small minds are being stolen from autism. I know today we all have a lot on our plate. But what's on our plate today is killing us. This is Linda West wishing your family a happy and healthy future.
Welcome back to the InfoWars Nightly News. We turn now to a segment with two of our newest and brightest reporters, Jakari Jackson and Melissa Melton. They went to visit the National Security Agency yesterday, as we now live in an age where we've ignored all the warnings of the founders and traded our liberty for security. So with that in mind, they were actually headed towards an RFID protest, and I guess they started wondering about how the sausage is made and who keeps track of all these ones and zeros. So they tried to go visit the great and powerful Oz. Things didn't exactly go their way. Let's take a look at that footage now, and then we'll get their reaction to it when we come back in just a moment.
We're here in San Antonio, Texas, about to cover a student RFID protest in just mere moments. We stopped here at this neighborhood Walmart to check for directions, and as you can see, we're surrounded by not only a Walmart, a GameStop, a Staples office supply store, but also a NSA data mining center. Now, in 2008, and I wouldn't be surprised if it has happened again since then, a journalist was detained for 45 minutes for filming the then-under-construction NSA Data Mining Center. We have been able to avoid detention here, and we are not going to press our luck. This is Jakari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News. Hey, NSA, if you decide to confiscate this tape, we are truly looking for the visitor center, and we would like to take a tour.
Yeah, we're trying to find the visitor center. Do you guys do guided tours here?
No, we don't.
Do you guys have any, like, information we can take home or anything like that?
Information as far as what?
I mean, just, like, what do you guys do here? Because, like, you guys do have a visitor center. Is that it, correct, sir?
We can't get that information out.
Okay. Are we being detained, officer?
Absolutely not.
Okay, just ask.
Just give some information. Okay, asking me for info. I want info for you, right?
Hey, well, can you answer my questions if I ask you some questions?
Okay. Can I get your ID, too?
Well, sir, she's not driving.
Why do I need to give you my ID?
I'm trying to verify who you guys are. You're asking me questions. Who am I talking to?
Okay, what is it that you want to know? Because you understand this is restricted government property, this area?
Well, sir, like I said...
There's a sign right here that states no electrical equipment, no video camera, no filming.
Okay, sir, we'll be happy to leave.
Okay.
I'm just asking, can you confirm for me that there is a visitor center over there, though?
How did you know there was a visitor center? What made you?
Sir, there's a sign over there.
There's a big sign that says visitor.
I'm just asking, can you confirm that it's over there? I'm not being a smart aleck.
I know, I'm asking you, if you saw a sign, why are you asking me if there's a visitor center?
Now, what is your name, officer?
My name is Sergeant Rivera.
There is, in fact, a visitor sign. When we got over there, we didn't see any clear markings that said visitor center.
Yes.
Rob, hey, they still got us out here. They got three cop cars on us.
But they're not
letting us leave.
Yeah, well, I asked if we were detained. They said no, but they're checking both our driver's licenses. It's been like 10 minutes now.
We're sandwiched in. We can't leave.
Yeah.
Are you taping all this?
Yeah, yes. We haven't turned the camera off.
Okay, good. So the police are telling you you're detained?
No, they said we're not detained, but they won't let us leave.
Have you told them that the NSA has already lost the lawsuit?
No, he won't confirm what this building is. He just said it's a government institution, and I asked him where the visitor center is, and he was like, why do you want to go to the visitor center? Yeah, we got whoever the guy was. His shirt said something. I couldn't make it out. I think it said, like, National Security or something like that.
Yeah. Because, I mean,
One of them is San Antonio police. The other have unmarked vehicles, so I'm not sure who they are.
Completely unmarked.
Okay, hold on. I'll try to get them over here.
Excuse me, sir. Officer.
My boss is on the phone. He'd like to talk to you if you have the time.
Actually, I'm conducting my business right now, so if you could, go ahead and hang up while I'm talking to you.
Okay, he's requesting that we hang up the phone.
Why is that?
Why? My boss is asking why is that.
Why? Because it's common courtesy to a police officer that I'm talking to you, the driver.
Okay.
Just drop the phone here, sir.
Okay. All right. I'll put it right there.
They were coming up on the other side of the car, too.
Yeah. So.
What's happening?
They said they're still conducting their business. But like I said, it's been at least 20 minutes now.
He said it's common courtesy not to talk on the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you don't have common courtesy.
Here they come.
All right, hold on. Hold on, Alex.
I'll put the phone down like that.
All right, guys, you guys got a business card?
Yes, I do. Matter of fact, officer, this is my boss's business card.
Okay.
He's actually, he'd like to talk to you guys if you have the time.
Okay. Appreciate it. We got things to do.
Sure.
All right, man, you guys are free to go, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. And what's your name, officer?
Please don't come back here.
Okay, we won't block this entrance again. Thank you, sir. Okay. All right, Alex, they said we can go. And, yeah, we just had an encounter with at least one police officer, two unmarked vehicles, one marked vehicle. I'm here filming Melissa Melton. We came out here to the NSA Data Mining Center in San Antonio, Texas. They got out. They left us out here for at least 20 minutes as they ran their checks. I'm sure we are now on a database somewhere like we weren't before, but, you know.
So there's some of the footage. I think they're going to edit even more of the footage later. But, guys, tell me what you saw on the scene there when you were Americans and you dared to film the NSA and even get out of the car.
Yeah, dare to film people who film us and read our emails in our own country. I mean, it's truly a ridiculous scene. We were out on scene, like you said, yesterday, about to do an RFID protest, and we stopped at the NSA Data Mining Center, which is in their secret location across the street from a Walmart.
Very secretive.
Yeah, very, very secretive. So we hop out. We did a couple laps, you know, just getting some B-roll. And Melissa says, hey, why don't we pull in and just get some footage? So we pull into an area. It was I guess you can call it their driveway or whatever. It was blocked off. No traffic coming in or out. We weren't impeding traffic in any way. So she gets out. She's filming. And in a coordinated effort, three vehicles, two of them unmarked, swoop in, and the guys hop out like, what are you guys doing out here, you know? You know, we were clearly outside of their fence, and they have these double barbed wire fences that go all the way around their complex. So we are obviously on the outside of their complex, but they're like, you can't shoot into our complex. I'm like, what's going on out here, man?
But wait, they tell people that if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't be worried about privacy or data, but they have something to hide at the center?
I guess so. I don't know what kind of national secrets they have out there in their front lawn, but yeah, apparently something.
I was only out of the car for like maybe a minute and a half, and I was just aiming the camera towards the large building, which is very conspicuously located across from the Walmart that we're apparently not even supposed to look at, when all of these guys just show up, and I immediately got back in the car because I didn't want my camera to get taken away. And they're like, what are you doing here? And, I mean, it just automatically, it was within a minute maybe or two of me leaving the vehicle.
And, like, we were laughing on our way back, you know, back to the studio about how coordinated it was. Like, there were guys up in the control room, blue team, go! And the guys swoop in.
Like that. And they let him back up.
Yeah,
obviously dangerous
we're
people
very
out there.
Dangerous,
yeah, very, very
dressed
dangerous.
As reporters with suits.
Yeah, we're in full business attire with cameras and microphones, and these big guys pull up and they hop out. What are you guys doing out here? And I'm like, we're just filming on
the United
States of America.
We tried to ask about the law. What law it was that said we couldn't be in this public area. And he's like, well, didn't you read the sign? And it's like, that sign could say anything. The sign was in like 8-point font. It could have said anything on that
sign. It really was. I mean, the sign was so small, you would have to get out of your car or wherever you were. You would have to walk up to the fence to read what was on the sign. That's how small the print was. So I almost wanted to be a smart guy. Well, let me go read the sign and go and walk up to it. But, you know, I didn't want to get tasered and, you know, and shot in the back.
The truth of the matter is they don't want people debating why are they listening to phone calls without warrants, why are they using a team of lawyers to go around the existing rules while arguing for new rules, why do they open a new giant data center in Utah to keep a list on everyone, to check it twice, to see who's naughty or not. I mean, you guys were looking for Santa Claus.
They're going to film us all the time. They're going to tap our phones. They're going to check our emails. They're going to do all this stuff to us 24 hours a day and keep all that data in this building, but we're not even allowed to look at it.
But it'd be friendly if they brought you presents later, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want the NSA man sliding down my chimney.
Oh.
But we were, we actually stopped, and Melissa can attest to this, we weren't able to get a shot of this, but they do have a sign that lists a visitor center.
Yeah.
So we drove around, we drove into the complex.
Oh, it's a visitor center.
Yeah, behind the barbed wire fences. Like, we didn't go into like their private areas. It was an open area, you can drive in. And it was before you got to the checkpoint. I also had checkpoints out there. So we pull into the sign. It says visitor center. We're driving around and we can't find the visitor center. They have no, even though they have a sign, they don't have a building marked as visitor center. So we're driving around and we tell that to the agents when they pull up to us. We say, hey, we're just out here looking for the visitor center. Can you actually confirm that there is a visitor center here on this premises?
And no, the guy said, I cannot confirm anything.
That's exactly what the guy said. He said, no, sir, I cannot confirm that.
No comment, huh?
I'm like, wow. I mean, is there a visitor center here? Like, I wanted to get an NSA shot glass or something, man.
Pamphlet, a t-shirt.
Something.
Very interesting. And the NSA has been caught trying to intimidate people filming their building, just as they have at the Federal Reserve and all these other pseudo-government agencies, basically none of them constitutionally mandated. But
when I want to do something really top secret and government and really official, I like to put my really expensive taxpayer-funded building right across the street from a Walmart supercenter. That's really the best idea.
And this whole area was developed. It wasn't just a Walmart. We're not talking about some building underground underneath some cornfield.
With a Walmart in the middle of nowhere.
You know, it was built
up. It's Walmart. They're not part of
anything. Yeah, it's off a major highway. There was a Staples out there, a GameStop. There was a Academy Sports and Outdoors. I mean, it was a populated area.
It's in an open area, obviously.
Yeah.
So, well, very interesting. The footage is up at InfoWars. We're showing it here in the report, and we'll leave it there for now.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Okay, we are going now to break, but when we come back, we have David Ortiz, who's going to interview Tom Woods, probably the leading voice for nullification, the answer to states' rights, the answer to turning around this federal bureaucracy, and it's all in a film for people who can't read anymore, Nullification, InfoWarsShop.com. We'll be right back.
Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
Welcome back. I am David Ortiz, and today we are joined by an individual who is extremely popular in the liberty movement, and that is Tom Woods. Now, Mr. Woods is a Constitution expert. He's also a senior fellow of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. He's also creator of Tom Woods Liberty Classroom, and he holds a bachelor degree in history from Harvard and has a master's and PhD from Columbia University, so obviously a very distinguished individual. Mr. Woods, thank you so much for joining us here on InfoWars Nightly News.
My pleasure, David.
Now, Mr. Woods, you're a Constitution expert. However, poll after poll show that most Americans, frighteningly, know very little about the political system. What are your thoughts on the fact that Americans know so little about world affairs and their government?
Well, of course, if you had an actually limited government, it really wouldn't matter if people were ignorant. If you think back to, like, say, the late 1830s, I bet almost nobody knew that Martin Van Buren was the U.S. president. It made no difference to them. He didn't have the ability to conscript them or to tax them. through the income tax or do audits of them or any of these sorts of things that we take for granted now. There were no drone strikes going on. There were no kill lists. So in those days, it didn't matter if you didn't know anything. But today, unfortunately, we don't have that luxury. And so when you don't know anything about what's going on, that makes it a whole lot easier for them to pull things on us, to tighten the vice around our necks. So unfortunately, you have to stay informed. And certainly about world affairs, well, for one thing, you should know enough about what's going on in the world so that you don't get snookered by the U.S. government into going to war with whoever the Hitler of the month happens to be. You should know. In fact, if you want to find out what's going on in the world, read newspapers coming from countries other than the U.S. You might have some chance of getting the real scoop about what's happening. But it's precisely this widespread ignorance that the regime plays upon. It figures nobody's going to know what's really going on around the world, so we'll just wave the flag and exploit their patriotism on behalf of interests which are quite murky.
Now, speaking of people who are authoritative, let's talk a little bit about President Barack Obama, and let's talk a little bit about his NDAA bill. It's one of the most controversial bills that has been signed in recent memory. In your opinion, is the NDAA bill, number one, constitutional? And do you think it will ultimately be struck down?
Well, I don't think it's constitutional. And in fact, Obama has tried to deny that it says what it actually does say. He's tried to then say that, well, he personally himself forswears any authority over American citizens to detain them indefinitely. But even if we could take him at his word, and you know, you'll pardon my cynicism that I think maybe we can't. Even if we could, well, who knows that whether or not future presidents would continue in his interpretive framework. So, no, I'm not convinced of the constitutionality of it, but whether it'll be repealed or struck down is another matter. But we've already seen one judge that initially took the view that this was unconstitutional, should be struck down. But the fact that something is unconstitutional does not guarantee you that it'll be struck down. I think that's the that's the lesson of the past 70 to 80 years of U.S. history, that especially as time goes on and the government continues to do something over time, it begins to ossify into a sort of accepted practice. And then it becomes viewed as revolutionary to want to overturn it. So you have to just keep the heat on constantly. And one thing that has encouraged me is that around the country, even at the very most local level, you see in one place after another initiatives calling for the nullification of the NDAA, urging local sheriff's departments not to cooperate in the execution of the NDAA. And I think these are altogether to be encouraged and welcomed, these types of nullification movements. On my YouTube channel, I made a video called Nullify the NDAA. And this is the kind of thing where you can actually bring together people who, according to the traditional political labels, are supposed to dislike each other, people on the so-called left and the so-called right. Well, one thing they can sort of agree on is that probably it's not a good idea to have the power to throw American citizens into jail indefinitely. You know, like that's something we can kind of see as a problem.
Now, you mentioned nullification. You were recently featured in a DVD, which we have on InfoWarsShop.com, but also I'm sure on your website, viewers can get it as well. It's called Nullification, The Rightful Remedy, and it focuses on the 10th Amendment. Tell us a little bit more about this amendment.
Well, viewers of your program doubtless already know about the 10th Amendment, but maybe not everybody, and it's an you know, it's great that there's at least a sliver of the public that's knowledgeable about, enough about it. But when the Constitution was being ratified by the different states, one of the most frequently heard objections wasn't just generally that it was missing a Bill of Rights, but specifically that it lacked an amendment that would guarantee the right of self-government to the states, that the states didn't want to go back to exactly the same situation they had when they were colonies and they could be dictated to by an outside entity. Well, they didn't want to do that. Even just because this outside entity spoke with a different accent, they still didn't want to be told what to do. So the 10th Amendment basically guarantees the self-governing rights of the states, that the United States is basically a collection of societies. And if you look in the Constitution, you'll notice that the Constitution always refers to the United States in the plural. So it will say the United States, and then we'll use a plural form of the verb. Because the emphasis is on the fact that the U.S. is a group of individual self-governing societies, and that's what the 10th Amendment is about. And nullification, which was Thomas Jefferson's idea, is just the logical flip side of the coin of the Tenth Amendment, which is that if the federal government tries to exercise a power that the states never delegated to it, then the states have to be able to tell it to go take a hike. We never gave you this power, so what right do you have to be exercising it? This is the sort of thing that you're right, there's a wonderful documentary that you can get through your store. And then I wrote a book in 2010 called Nullification, that just chapter by chapter goes through the totally forgotten U.S. history of how the states used to do this. The things states used to get away with is just blow your mind, and talking about how we can employ this tool today. But the more we use this word, the better, because it's a forbidden concept. We're not supposed to be talking about it. The New York Times doesn't want us talking about it. The Democrats, the Republicans don't want us talking about it. So that alone makes it worth talking about. And my own view is that the more we can get the word nullify into colloquial usage, the better. This is the way you and I can spot ourselves across a crowded room, so to speak, if I order a drink and then I suddenly decide, well, maybe on second thought, I'd rather have a bourbon on the rocks. I should say to the bartender, bartender, I'd like to nullify my order and replace it. And then that way he'll know I'm one of these people.
Right, right. Now, Mr. Woods, I mean, this is clearly stated in the Constitution. I mean, it's right there. There have been critics of this amendment. What is their argument? And also, are states taking advantage of this amendment?
Well, there are people who try to dispute the Tenth Amendment. They have an uphill battle. And the argument that they've made, for example, the argument that the U.S. Supreme Court made in the early 1940s was that the Tenth Amendment really doesn't have any substantive value. It doesn't have any substantive content. It's just like it's a tautology. In other words, it's just like the statement, all bachelors are unmarried. Well, that doesn't really tell us anything. That just defines the word bachelor. Well, likewise, for the Tenth Amendment to say all powers not delegated are reserved, of course all powers not delegated are reserved. But then they go on to take the view that, however, an expansive number of powers have indeed been delegated. So the Tenth Amendment doesn't really apply, and it really is, they say that we have exaggerated its importance, but Thomas Jefferson said the Tenth Amendment is the cornerstone of the Constitution. The states were absolutely insisting on it. There was something almost exactly like it in the Articles of Confederation that preceded the Tenth Amendment. And really, the Tenth Amendment, even if you hadn't had a Tenth Amendment, the Constitution would be identical. The Tenth Amendment is just spelling out what's already implicitly contained. Because common law held that when you have a document like the Constitution, the Constitution is considered to have given an exhaustive listing of powers. Well, Article 1, Section 8 is precisely that exhaustive listing. So even if you didn't have a Tenth Amendment, clarifying that the federal government has nothing other than this exhaustive list, common law principles would have taken care of that this is an exhaustive list, that when you have a governing document like this, it is presumed that the list is exhaustive. Now, in terms of whether states are taking advantage of it, well, there are two senses of taking advantage. I mean, the left would say that some of the states are trying to exploit the Tenth Amendment for their own purposes, but I like the interpretation of take advantage to mean to appeal to the Tenth Amendment to get from it the powers that the states were indeed intended to retain. And I think, if anything, the states are not taking enough advantage of the Tenth Amendment. They're not doing enough to assert the powers that are supposed to belong to them under the Tenth Amendment until, that is, we started to see this modern nullification movement taking shape. Now, you won't hear nullification talked about on the so-called right-wing radio programs like Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh. They couldn't care less about the states reasserting themselves. Walter Williams on the Rush Limbaugh show will say it, but he's only the fill-in host. But this is the sort of thing, we cannot talk about this enough, because obviously the federal government is just not going to limit itself, and it just doesn't matter what you do. You can have all the petitions you want. They're not going to listen to you. You can appoint justices. Doesn't matter. So we have to start at the other end of things, namely at the local level, asserting the power of nullification as a constitutional remedy, not something that you and I thought up in the year 2012, but as something that we can trace back to the ratifying conventions of the late 1780s.
Now, in about a month or two, I'm told that you're going to be featured in another documentary called The Bubble, which focuses on the state of the U.S. economy. What are your thoughts on the state of the U.S. economy? I mean, we hear the phrase economic collapse. Today, I hear that there are riots going on in Spain where people are literally looking for food in trash bins. That's a story that I just saw today. What is your take on the state of the U.S. economy?
Well, first I'll just note that The Bubble, which you can find out about at thebubblefilm.com, the idea of it is really trying to learn from the past so we can learn about what we should do now and what's likely to happen in the future. So we actually talked to people who predicted that there was going to be a problem, you know, like the Ron Pauls of the world, for example. These are the people we want to talk to. And it's kind of surprising there hasn't been a documentary like that talking to those people about the economy and talking about what we should do in the future. You'd think these would be the first people you'd get in line to go see. But in terms of today, well, what I think is likely, I don't think the U.S. economy is going to fully collapse, so to speak, because I do believe in the ability of free individuals to find each other and satisfy what they need and satisfy their requirements. I think the black market economy, by and large, would pick up where the out in the open economy leaves off. If the government tries to impose restraints of various kinds or whatever, one way or another, we will, you know, we'll solve each other's problems. We'll be there for each other. But we're going to be in for a pretty rough, I don't know how many years. I think eventually the situation is bright. Once the U.S. government ultimately admits that it's bankrupt, I think things are rosy after that. If we can clear away this debris of these self-perpetuating bureaucracies, then maybe we can breathe again. I think the main problem is that we've got these entitlement programs that a lot of people are dependent on. The problem is there's no way to pay for them. Lawrence Kotlikoff, who's a Democrat from Boston University, is estimating that the present value of the unfunded liabilities, Social Security, Medicare, is in excess of $220 trillion. Now, that doesn't mean that's the amount of money we're going to have to pay out over the next 75 years. That figure means that's the amount of money, $220-something trillion, is the amount of money we would have to invest today earning a decent return in order to be able to pay out all of the payments that are going to be required over the next 75 years. Well, the U.S. government hasn't got a spare $220 trillion. So this is mathematically impossible, and these are going to be wrenching changes. And so what we have to do is be prepared for this and be prepared to help our fellow Americans through what will be a very wrenching and difficult series of changes. But we have to recapture what it means to be Americans. In the 19th century, Alexis de Tocqueville, the great European observer of America, said, you know, the funny thing about America is that in Europe, anytime any project needs to be undertaken, they come up with some government involvement. But in the U.S., there's always some voluntary organization that spontaneously comes into existence to solve the problem. That's what we're going to need to do again.
Now, Mr. Woods, we only have a few more moments, so I'm going to ask you one more quick question. Recently, Gary Johnson, speaking of democracy and the presidency and the upcoming elections and the importance of individuals getting involved in our political system, Gary Johnson recently filed a lawsuit against the Commission on Presidential Debates, saying that it was completely unconstitutional that he be prohibited from participating in the debates. Do you know about that lawsuit? And if so, does he have a case?
I know about the lawsuit. I don't know enough about the details of the lawsuit. I'm not convinced that he has a case. I think morally he has a case. I'm not sure that legally he has a case. And unfortunately, as we know, that's not always the same thing. If I were Gary Johnson, though, I would do everything at my disposal. I've got the internet. I've got a ways to reach the public that we never had up till very recently. And at every presidential debate, I would have a huge event right out in front, as close to the event as the authorities would allow me to get. I get as many of my supporters there as possible. I would answer all the questions that are being asked, but I'd do it right out there. I would try to overshadow the event. I would just constantly doing these things. I mean, publicity stunts. I mean, be creative, for heaven's sake. Get out there and do something. I would be as tough as nails on this publicly.
So you're saying that legally the two-party system can prevent third-party candidates, fourth-party candidates from participating in the process?
I'm saying that morally they ought not to, but I don't see that there's any requirement that says that anybody the Commission on Presidential Debates is required to obey what you or I might want to see. I would love to see somebody other than the two clones up there to expose to the American public that the system is a fraud. But precisely because that's what the effect would be, it would expose the system as a fraud. They've rigged it so that that can't happen. But I don't see that there's any constitutional requirement. The Constitution doesn't even envision presidential debates occurring. So I'm not really sure that there is a legal case, but as I say, there's a pretty strong moral case. But regardless of how the case turns out, he ought to be out there screaming at the top of his lungs, figuratively speaking, and reaching the American public and not just being hey, look, I want to have this tax and they want to have that tax. The Gary Johnson message ought to be, I want to abolish, smash, shut down. I want to be a cog. I want to stop everything that's going on in this regime, foreign and domestic. It is a threat to the American public. It is absolutely opposed to the welfare of the American people. These two people inside this building are yammering on about meaningless questions. I'm the only one who will give you the real answers. I mean, that's the way I would spin it. And regardless of how some politically well-connected lawyer, namely a judge, rules in my favor, nevertheless, I'm getting my message out to the public.
Now, Mr. Woods, we have 30 seconds left. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the public?
Well, just refuse to listen to CBS and the New York Times. I'm glad to say that, as my friend Lou Rockwell puts it, I don't think anybody under 25 even reads a newspaper anymore. And because of that, it's much harder for them to keep their grip over your minds. And that's a wonderful thing. And I hope also you'll follow me at tomwoods.com.
Well, Mr. Woods, thank you so much for your time. We greatly admire your work, and we greatly admire the fact that you're fighting for the Patriot movement. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, David. Thanks for having me.
And remember, if you want to continue supporting our operation, become a member of PrisonPlanet.tv. It's a wonderful website. It's less than $6 a month, and you'll get a lot of programming on that website. You'll get to see Alex's show live. You'll get to see his documentaries in HD, Alex Rants, free ebooks. It's a wonderful, wonderful website, and again, it helps fund our operation. And in just a minute, we will air part two of an interview that Alex conducted with Steve Schenck of eFoods Direct. It's titled Secrets of a Food Insider. We'll be right back in a moment.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
We are back. Thank you for joining us for this InfoWars Nightly News special report. This is part two of our interview in studio with a major food industry insider. Over 30 years, the trailblazer, the granddaddy of the storable foods movement. He has been absolutely on target with his breakdown and predictions because he's in the inside. He's ordering food a year out on contracts that hasn't even grown yet. And now food prices are exploding all over the world. Here, it's a serious pain in the butt, and some people go hungry, but overseas, it's a death sentence. Now, we talked about Global Food Crisis Special Report last week in part one, and you know, I had a lot to add, of course, in the 45-minute interview, so there are a few points Steve didn't get to. I want him to kind of recap and hit a few points that he wanted to finish, and then what I found really interesting in a private meeting we had yesterday before taping this, where he was really laying it out to me. And I said, you ought to say this on air. You ought to stay in town for another day and talk about this. So here he is. Secrets of the food industry. From the government angle, but also all these big companies and others rushing into storable foods, as people understand. 50 million on food stamps, half the public and government assistance of some type, food shortages, the Chinese coming in and buying our food, buying all the African food. This is a perfect storm. We're hoping for the best. We're preparing for the worst. And it looks like the worst is what we're getting with QE3 and more. So, Steve, right before we started taping again here, You were really laying some heavy stuff on me. So before we even get to recapping global food crisis and then get to the new info, you looked at me and you said, what would be the greatest cash crop if you were ruthless? And I figured it out in about 30 seconds with you sitting there looking at me. But of course, I've said this myself in other ways, but it's true. And so let's try to recreate that now. You know, we're sitting here, you know, just take the last 45 minutes, taking a break. I mean, say it again. Recreate that moment.
Well, what if you were a farmer and you were looking for the ideal cash crop or cash, you know, investment? What if you found something, a critter that would pay to be born and would provide its own shelter, would provide its own food, provide a living, and pay you for the privilege of doing that? And then if it got sick, it would pay you to keep it alive while you went through several means of treatment. And
while they tested things on you that they kept for themselves, it worked.
Every 10 years they change one new drug, you know, for another one, because the second one is going to offset the side effects of the first one, and they can keep you alive for a lot longer time. And then you kept that critter along, and then it pays for the final hospitalization, and then it pays to die.
And be planted.
And it pays to be buried. Now, that would be an ideal cash crop.
And so you'd want to put fluoride in the water and other things, so you'd make them sick earlier, so you could get more of what they produce, so they would never get enough wealth to become your competitor. You wouldn't want people to do well either. You wouldn't want too much prosperity. In the old model, we weren't really being so much farmed. It was more of a prosperity system. But now we are being farmed. And the feudal farmers that are farming us, they don't want us to have prosperity. And they've taken the richest country in history and in just 50 years of globalism turned us into the greatest debtors who have to ship in 40% of our food.
Well, the interesting thing about it, I had thought at one time of writing a little pamphlet, Dictatorship for Idiots.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Okay, and here's what I do. I would tell the totalitarian governments, I would tell the wannabe dictators that they're going exactly the wrong direction. You see, the New World Order and all these idiots that want to control people are really stupid. Do you know how they could be wealthy and prosperous beyond their fondest dreams? Is if they took some of these third world countries, these little wannabe dictators, and they run around buying their wives all sorts of shoes while everybody else is starving. If they would take every person in that country and find a means by which they could use their talents and their abilities and make them so prosperous, and they wouldn't tax the money away from them, but they would make their economy so prosperous that every single soul, there were no poor among them, they would be wealthy beyond their possible imagination.
And the Federal Reserve admits, they call that overheating in the economy, they work constantly to suppress us, constantly to ship the jobs, constantly to write tax codes where you've got to leave. They're doing everything they can to try to shut our economy down. It's called Agenda 21.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is you got to say to yourself, how stupid are these people? They consider themselves the elite.
Well, they're sadists, so they'd rather make us poor and poisoned and ugly so they can feel good about themselves. They're evil. Steve, look, they're not like our founders, who weren't perfect, but compared to these people, they were like gods. I mean, they understood, hey, they had such good opinions of themselves, they're like, I'll just empower other people as well. People say, oh, well, some of them had slaves and stuff. It was their ideas that ended all that. That was in the time they were in. It's those ideas that have trailblazed everything.
The masters, the great masters of all times, Christ, Buddha, all of these guys, the ones that you don't even hear about, they're so advanced. They are never judgmental, and they are always seeking to uplift and improve mankind. And so the fascinating thing that you have is we have people who are intelligent. And in terms of learning, one of the things that I deal with constantly, and I'm just about my book is going to be out in October. So
I want to have you on about that.
It's going to be fun. But anyway, but the fascinating thing is people learn in different ways. A true master can learn by reading about and studying other people's experiences. A wise man can learn by just observing what other people do. But most of us just have to pee on the electric fence.
Experience.
Yep, the hard way. But the fascinating thing about what we're doing here is we're trying to help people learn. You see, I should be retired right now. I don't need to run this company that I'm running. You don't need to make the money that you're making other than to keep funding what you're doing in terms of educating
exactly.
And helping people.
Listen, 6 years ago, we talked in. I had like five, six employees. I wanted to stay small, but I realized I'm already reaching so many people. I have a responsibility. It's torture to run 50 people. It's torture to try to get it all right. It's torture. Well, you and I dream of getting out of here. I dream of the New World Order being defeated and literally going and working on my family farm and ranch. You're absolutely right. That's why I admire George Washington. You know, the King of England, they were offering him the kingship, and George Washington, after two terms, he just said, I'm going to my farm. And that's what people don't get is that, well, I mean, you're absolutely right, though. And you're going all over the country educating people that you better be self-sufficient. And it does start with food, and that's how you finance your overall message. But we're doing the same thing here. You know, the globalists want you dependent. We don't want you dependent. We want you empowered, and it's the difference. And that's why the globalists are not the elite, because if they were elite, they would know they want to empower humanity, and they say they want to empower humanity, but everything they do in their own real manuals, it's about putting humanity down. And I say they're the scum of the earth for it. Give us now, as an icon in your industry, known for over 30 years, all these people, you know, claim they were the first. It's that I went and looked it up. You're the trailblazer. You've got the biggest company, the best company, the whole nine yards, eFoodsDirect.com. You've got the floor. Lay out the secrets. Because, I begged you. You said, I don't want to go out and say bad things about people. Notice your advertisement doesn't do that. All the others sit there and say they're the best. Everybody else is scum. Notice you're the one not saying that. But people deserve to know the truth. And there are some other good companies out there. But the point is, a lot of it is fly by night. You've been around over 30 years. Break it down for us, Steve Schenck.
Well, the way I'm going to do that is the way I consider morally to do it. I'm not going to tell you what they do or don't do. I'm going to tell you what we do, and you can draw your own conclusions. Okay, here's the deal. I was in the dehydrated food business, shipping out storable food. Dehydrated food, typically when you got a can of carrots, they're just dried up old carrots, and you put them together with seven or eight other cans, you can make a meal. Just getting people prepared so that when the stuff hit the fan, they had food. The same principle that we're working with right now. But it became impossible for people, really in our day and age, to be able to use the food. So they had to just store it back and never use it. And it didn't taste all that great. So we decided that we were going to put out some food that was totally complete in and of itself, that they didn't have to do anything to, that they just boil some water and put some food in, and it had to be good food. Couldn't find anybody that makes it. No one makes it. All of the food storage companies out there buy from other suppliers that just have the recipes, and they buy it and put it in their can, put their label on it, and that's it. Couldn't find anything that we would eat ourselves or feed our grandkids. So we started making our own. Didn't want to. We're just a marketing company. So we started making our own food. Well, it was almost impossible to find food that didn't have added MSG. Didn't have hydrogenated oil that'll make you glow in the dark, walk sideways, and one eye travel to the other side of your head. Didn't have genetically modified stuff that hasn't been proven. Then we got into looking into the genetically modified stuff and discovered that no one has ever been allowed to do any tests through the U.S. Department of Agriculture on genetically modified food and the long-term effects of it. But yet all of a sudden we have allergies coming out of our ears. We can't. You and I were raised on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
They've never allowed it on humans. They have in Russia and China. Same thing you see in rats. There have been rodent studies, guinea pigs, you name it, sterilization, deformities. Just it's devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not just genetically modified. It's the cross species traits. Oh, this stuff is deadly.
You want to know about you? Maybe your folks don't really understand what this genetic modification thing is. Let's take soybeans. That's the most common problem. You know, that's the one that
it's the fillers.
Yeah, it's the one that's in everything, and that's where the genetic modification started with first. Monsanto created that genetic modification and stuff, and now you have a hard time finding a soybean right now that's not genetically modified. In fact, we order our soy flour from one of the only plants in the entire country that will not allow genetically modified stuff in their plant. They can't. And so the whole thing with soy, here's how genetic modification goes. You've got a soybean. They want to find a means by which they don't have to cultivate. In other words, run the shovels through and dig up the weeds and do all that working of the land. They want to be able to spray Roundup on the stuff and kill off the weeds, but they have to have the plant not get killed off too because it's a defoliate. So what you do is you take, you know, the gene pool from the soy, and this is going to be my explanation of it. This is not scientific. This is Steve Shank's simplified version so I can understand it. And then they take a bacteria, which is a critter, and they take some of the genetic licensing from that critter, and they put it together with a plant, and all of a sudden they have a plant that is half critter, half plant, not half and half, but enough of each.
And that's a cross species, but then it gets the trait they want, but then randomly has all these other traits, and you take the BT corn, it's got a fungus 1,000 times stronger than it should be, where it kills bugs that eat it, but it's okay for us to eat it, and we wonder why people are getting Alzheimer's at 30.
But you see, now let's look at allergies. You ever have anybody, I'm sure that your viewers out there know somebody that's had a liver transplant or one of the major transplants. What they have to do is knock down their immune system, something fierce, so that the body will accept that, because what the body is, the way it defends itself is it prevents anything foreign from coming in. It kills it off or gets rid of it, and it rejects it. Okay, now we've got a whole bunch of allergies going on, right? So what happens when the body eats something or consumes something like what you were talking about and like what I was talking about, that it says, oh, soy, cool, I'll eat that sucker. The Orientals have been living on soy for thousands of years. And all of a sudden it gets inside and it says, whoa, what's this? This is, it's not a plant. It's not an animal. Reject.
And now you've got Crohn's disease.
Allergic reaction.
Yes, exactly. You're having an allergic, and all the doctors admit GMO is what's causing it to explode. But this industry now, what they had 8 major food crops GMO, now they're coming out with over 100. Everything. And then their genetics infects the similar species, and there's almost no corn varieties that haven't been infected now.
I understand. Now, you go back to our original subject.
It's like a space alien takeover.
There you go.
I mean, aliens, if they came here, this would be their plan to kill us and kill us slowly, where they just incrementally kill us and we don't notice.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, how do you cook a frog? We won't go into that.
Back to the farming point. I've got to make this, and we're going to go through your other secrets.
Okay.
This article came out, The End of Humanity, Rise of the Robots, The Elite's Plan for Future Doesn't Include You, Alex Jones, Paul Watson. This has the quotes of the top futurists and top globalists saying, we've been farming you, now we've got robots, we're going to kill you, and we're going to shut your food off and shut your land off with Agenda 21, and then we're going to bankrupt you into government hands, and then we're going to release bioweapons and kill you.
Well, now, that's a cheery little note.
No, I mean, I've got their quotes.
I understand.
This is what's insane about this. And they just talk about it like we're not listening.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go through your other secrets. I mean,
well, the bottom line is that we're the only company that I know of that makes sure that there's no genetically altered stuff in there. Most of the companies don't even care. And you see, you got to understand what we're dealing with. If you eliminate all this bad stuff that makes you glow in the dark and all that, and then you get flavor profiles that are as closely guarded right now, our flavor profiles are as closely guarded as the recipe for Coca-Cola, because you can't get food that tastes this good.
Tastes incredibly good.
And the reason that's important is what people don't realize is with storable food, it used to be storable. Now, right now, with the economy the way it is, this stuff is half as expensive as what you're going out and buying at the grocery store.
Because you're buying factory direct.
Yeah, we've eliminated four steps in the chain of distribution. That's the only way that we can pay three times as much for the raw materials and still come out selling it for half the cost of what you're buying in the grocery store. Now, you tell me how you can beat that. Well, the fact is, what most people don't realize is that when you're dealing with quality of food, when you put the good stuff in there, the human body has a phenomenal means of recovering from anything, even the crap that we were being fed through all the factory farms and things. And so what we're having is we're having people contact us every day that are saying, you know, I've noticed that I got a lot more energy. I don't eat as much food. I feel better. We've got two or three families who have food restrictions that can only eat the food that we put out. And it's not because it's good, it's our food. It's just because what we've done is we've gone back to food that the body recognizes it hasn't had all of the additives, preservatives, and things go bumping in the night added to it. And the human body, if it's just given good food, will recover, and the people will gain their natural weight, come back to their natural weight. Their body will eventually just heal itself, and they will be able to eat food like usually. You know, we have people, there's a big thing about how many calories do you get or how many grams of protein. You know how the pioneers did it? They didn't even count calories, didn't count the protein. What they did was if they run up and down the hill every day for quite a while, they'd come home and they'd be hungry and they'd eat a lot. Somebody that was sitting at a desk job, come home, they weren't that hungry, they wouldn't eat that much. But we've got so many additives in the food, like the additional MSG and all of the stuff that makes food addictive so that people bypass their natural appetite.
It's addictive because it's a chemical, it's That's a drug. Right. Take MSG, the Japanese couldn't get their troops to eat horrible canned food, mm-hmm. horse meat and stuff. They learned to put MSG in it, and it's literally a drug and makes you want to eat, and that became...
And the other thing that it does is it allows manufacturers not to have to spend three times as much on the raw materials as we do. It allows them to buy number three and number four grade vegetables and put in lower quality food. Food has not been ripened in the on the vine, so it gets its nutrition, and therefore its flavor. They can put the cheap stuff in, and that actually fools your taste buds into thinking that you're eating good food.
You were telling me about...
In fact, it's addictive.
Tell folks about spies that are trying to get into eFoods Direct. I mean, you were telling me that they literally follow you around, they like your suppliers, everything. You were telling me the egg story.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation. We try... Obviously, our recipes are very closely guarded. But we've got one organization that has hired some food, some food chemists to analyze our recipes to try and duplicate what we're doing. We went up and contacted a supplier that had some really good quality items that we wanted to use for raw materials. 2 days later, a couple of folks followed us up there. They didn't even know about these guys, but they had found out that we had gone up and visited them. They went up and visited them, and they're trying to buy our raw materials. And it just, this type of stuff goes on, and where it comes from. these people are just trying to make a living and trying to do business. But where it comes from is that what we're trying to do, our basic objective, with 12 million American children, American kids, these aren't the ones that the movie stars are adopting because it looks good. These are American kids go to bed hungry every night. We've got millions of Americans out of work. We've got millions of Americans out of their homes. Half the population can't even afford their stinking food in America. Somebody has to feed Americans and give them back their freedom and give them a food that's not only good to eat right now, but is good enough quality to keep them healthy that they can put in and store while they still have the stinking money to put it in, so that at some point in time, we still have enough people with enough liberty and freedom to take back this country. Because that's what has to happen. And that's why your people have to get some food. If they don't get it from the sources that you suggest, they're in danger of all this other junk that we're talking about. But the bottom line, get some stinking food so you are not dependent on the system that wants to make you dependent. Because the extent to which you're dependent is the extent to which you give power over yourself to that on which you depend. And the only thing we have control over is putting in our food, and we better doggone well do it while we can still afford it and while it's still available, and that's what happens.
And we talked about that in part one, if people missed it, Global Food Crisis Special Report, where you explained that's why they're pushing the food stamps, that's why they want everybody dependent, that's why they're driving up the price, that's why they're shipping the food out of the country.
And what kind of food are they putting into the schools? I cracked the story that we were talking about with this pink slime stuff.
Oh yeah, talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're putting the pink slime. What pink slime is just the trimmings off from the parts of the critter that you normally wouldn't sell because of potential for E. coli contamination, if you get my drift.
Yeah, pig colons.
Yeah, the stuff that you don't eat. And so what they do is they treat it with ammonia, and then they have declared that it's legal for human consumption.
And then it's a kickback to the specialized companies that then sell all this crud. I mean, I remember going to public school and how horrible the food tasted. And now a lot of schools, Denver, Colorado, Chicago, Illinois, they won't let parents pack their food. I mean, it could be T-bone steak and a salad. They throw it in the trash. Parents can't be trusted. You're going to eat pink slime because it's a kickback to Rahm Emanuel's boys. What do you make of that?
Well, I make the fact that we're dealing with the regulations that require some of the foods that are actually not fit for human consumption to be approved. Like, for example, the addition of MSG. And in fact, if you want to look at something that's really nasty, you check out what hydrogenated oil does to the human body, and it makes MSG look like child's play. And so all I'm saying is that the reason that we put the quality of food in, the reason that we don't follow the same practices that are followed right now in the storable food industry, which is basically to put just about anything into the package, assuming, let me give you a perfect example. During 1999, Y2K, we shipped a lot of food. There was another company, it's really well known, it's heavy duty in Utah, that was shipping a lot of the basics out, you know, wheat and that type of thing. When the towers went down, you know, a year or so later, when the towers went down, we started getting calls from people who say, hey, we got to get some more food. And we got a call from some folks that had ordered some wheat from this company up in Idaho. The two gals were neighbors, and they'd opened up one of the buckets of wheat, and there were a whole bunch of grasshopper parts on top of it. Now, that's a little bit of extra protein, but it's pretty unsavory. But one of them took a cup of the wheat and put it into a magic mill. I don't know if you're familiar with this, a high-speed mill that grinds wheat into flour. And it instantly blew up the mill because it had little bitty rocks in it. Okay? So what we did was we took the message, and I called the manager of this other company, and I said, hey, Steve, we've got an interesting situation. Here's some of the folks that you sold during 1999, had, you know, some bad stuff in their wheat. They got about $6 of it. I thought you might want to know about it and maybe replace it for them. He said, no, that's ridiculous. These people aren't going to be using that stored food anyway. They won't know the difference, and we don't want to do anything. So we replaced the buckets of wheat for these gals, but that's the attitude. The whole idea behind most of the food storage industry, there are a bunch of carpetbaggers that are coming in, putting any kind of crap into the pouches. Oh, by the way, 2 years ago, everything was in number 10 cans. Since we started putting out the pouches of food, pretty much everybody is doing the pouches and not so much number 10 cans anymore, but be that as it may, we are setting the standard for the industry, but I'm not sure the industry could even be called an industry. But the fact is that what's happening is that the reason it's so important to be aware of what you're buying, check it out, make sure that it doesn't have the stuff that makes you glow in the dark. Make sure that it's something that is really good to eat, because when you have to go on your food supply, children will not eat something that they don't like. I don't care how hungry they are.
And you also get the food fatigue if it's just one thing like beans and rice. But expanding on that, because I know you don't like to talk, you know, bad about your competition. I don't see anybody out there saying, call, get 6 free meals where you just pay for the shipping. You know, test it. I mean, you've always been saying, the 6-7 years you've been a sponsor, or longer now, I guess, 8 years, time flies. You've always said, call, get some samples, test it, eat this, learn about it, use it, because you're proud of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And again, I remember when I first started trying to get storable food about 12, 13 years ago, it was like old MREs, or I'd open it up, or it was just like, it wasn't even real. So I guess they realized, people know we need to have some food storage as real insurance. And so there's all these fly-by-night people, and they make all these incredible claims. You know, when you pointed out our food will last on average more than 10 years, your competition just says 100. But yeah. But explain to people, you can't put a shelf life on things, can you? You have to estimate it. Tell folks.
Well, one of the things that I troubled over was, you know, all these claims that are coming. Some of the outfits are saying 50 years, 25 years, 30 years.
8 million.
Yeah. Well, we've got 25 years on our website. Just because we kept having people ask us, well, bottom line, you can call up any nutrition department at any university that you want to and ask them how long dehydrated food lasts. Well, it depends on the moisture content. It depends on whether any light can get into the package. It depends on whether there's how much oxygen is out of it. All of these things. And so you can't say it lasts a certain length of time. That's horse pucky. So usually what we do is we say, you know, up to 25 years or whatever. But that's a distraction.
Whatever you say, they just top it.
Oh, yeah.
So you should just say, well, generally this lasts more than 10 years, but, you know, it depends on what it is and things. And it's like, yeah. Well, we have 500 years. You know, I mean, I'm joking, but like 50 yeah. years, and we've been in the business 39 years, and just, you know, on and on yeah. and on.
But you see,
I also noticed, because I had a few other food sponsors before you, and I would try the food, wouldn't like it. They'd also do stuff like be a sponsor, not pay. You know, like, you know, get behind. I mean, it's just like there's a lot of snakes out there.
Yeah.
eFoodsDirect.com/Alex to find the discounts, the specials. We just appreciate your sponsorship. And I know that my family for storable food has eFoods Direct food. And I hope people will also call the number up there. Now explain that deal, because a lot of my listeners have gotten the 6 meals. How does that work?
It's very simple. It's 6 meals. It's 3 packages of food, and we figure that there are 2 meals in each package. And so we send those out along. Right now it's coming out of a nice little box that has a CD in it that tells you some of the things that you need to know about food, and has got a planning pack in it. So
it's an information pack, and it's got food.
It's actually not intended to be a sample. It's intended to be a food planning program, so they can figure out how many meals it takes or how many of our packages it takes to feed their family. But that thing, it's just an absolute outstanding piece of information for people. But all they do is they pay the shipping on it. It's $19.95.
And I know shipping, that's what it costs, yeah. $9.95.
That's it. And we give it to them free. And people just contact us back. Now, they need to contact through you because we're shipping this out to them. Doesn't cost them anything but just the cost of shipping. And
sure, they can go to efoodsdirect.com/Alex or yep. freefood.efoodsdirect.com. Freefood.efoodsdirect.com.
And folks, you need to go through Alex and his site. Just for the simple reason that we need to track this so that he gets credit for what
sure,
we're
but
doing.
Steve, I'm just glad they're getting food.
No, that's the point.
Yeah.
The fact
sure, I mean, you sponsors help us get the word out as well.
We're both in the business, and the best thing that your listeners and your viewers can do is, you know, the scriptures say, once ye have been warmed, warn your neighbor. And the best thing that they can do for your business and for what you're trying to do, for the message you're trying to get out, and for what we're trying to do is feed as many Americans as we possibly can, feed and prosper as many families. The best thing they can do for both of us is tell their neighbors and their friends and their relatives and anybody that can afford food. And also, they might, if they have a few extra bucks, help some other people to afford it.
Well, I know this. Going factory direct from a great, you know, trusted supplier like yourself who actually produces it all yourself now, I mean, that's the way to go so people don't have to go through trial and error like I did. But the least they can do is $9.95. That just pays for the shipping. Get it, read over it, try it out for yourself. That's what we've done. You know, I even told my wife a few months ago, I said, you know, go ahead and get from a few other suppliers. And some of it was okay, but nothing compared to the quality from the J. Michael Stevens Group, efoodsdirect.com. There was one other question I wanted to ask you, and now I can't remember it here. It's just there's so many things to go over, so many things to talk about. Oh, this is it. What percentage of American people are actually getting in storable food? Because as things begin to collapse, as I see people starting to really wake up to what's happening, and as I kind of get scared, oh, my gosh, we've been right about all this. It's like it's kind of bittersweet. See, we told you so, but, man.
Yeah, it's one of those things you hate to be right.
Yeah, exactly. You hate to be right. But what's going to happen when people finally figure it out and rush out and try to get food?
It's going to be difficult. When we had Japan go down, okay, we had an instant huge spike in orders. And you got to understand, if we're projecting a year out ahead with our raw materials, right now, just to give you an idea, we are stocking up as fast as we can. We're buying raw materials ahead because of what we just saw in the Democratic and the Republican conventions. We're looking at that and seeing where this is going, and we're stocking up, and we suggest that people do that. But right now, Alex, this is September. We are drawing on our purchase orders from November right now. That's how things are moving. If we have a huge spike, somebody gets really nervous, or when the September U.S. Department of Agriculture figures come out on this crop, we won't see the increase in prices until October. We're buying as fast and as hard as we can right now before those hit. And everyone that's out there that is concerned about getting food in, either for availability, because there are going to be shortages, or from the standpoint of price, if you can still afford it right now, I would suggest that you do the same thing that we're doing, is get it in. Because at the point where there's no food available, we're going to have a situation where no matter how much money you got, you won't be able to get the food.
Expanding on that, so many of the companies now, just in regular food, fast food, whatever, they admit more and more fillers. The food is getting worse and worse as they try to keep the illusion of that going on. And I just think about how they've tried to totally domesticate us. We showed some statistics up there where 55% of Americans, I saw this poll a few weeks ago, think the government will take care of them during a disaster. They never do. 9/11, they say the dust is good for you, not bad for you. Katrina, every time.
You know what they did in Japan? You know what they, with the high radioactivity level, they were telling the people that a 10% a 10 oh no I'm say a 10 times
safe level was okay, rads.
A 10 times safe level was okay.
No, it's worse than that. The Environmental Protection Agency, it turns out, within 3 months, tuna were getting caught off San Diego with 20-something times. Okay. Then people can look this up. We covered it at the time. The Environmental Protection Agency raised the Environmental Protection Agency raised
the acceptable level.
Yeah. With all these isotopes, 125%, 100, some they raised thousands of times saying it was safe.
Yeah.
When my wife was in Europe when Chernobyl happened, she was a kid, and her dad was a diplomat, in Italy, and I went and looked up the news, this was the case. All over Europe, they didn't let people have any of the cabbage or lettuce, things grown, because the radiation's coming down. No milk. It was all powdered milk from the U.S. or other places for 6 months because they knew that was bioaccumulating. In Japan and here, they just say, hey, everything's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, and it turned out they faked how dangerous it was. But again, we're supposed to just trust the government.
Well, you go back to the government supplying things. I can't remember. Was it Edward? I think it was Edward way back before Katrina. They had some of the folks from the agencies, the government agencies, contact a huge Army-Navy store out in California and buy 72,000 MREs to take out there. Now, I interviewed during Katrina, the Katrina thing, I interviewed a man and his two sons who...
just to know, that was back when you did a radio show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I interviewed a man and his two sons who had been caught in the barricades between the shore and the railroad track. You remember when they put the concertina wire along?
Yeah, they wouldn't let people leave.
Yeah.
This is the government. You can't leave the city. Yep. The highways were open. They would shoot people that tried to leave. Right. You're going to go to a superdome where we're going to rape you, and if you're rich and live in a high and dry area, we're going to come take your guns. This government is a pack of murdering criminals.
Well, so anyway, what had happened is that they hired the teenagers to get on trucks from the organization that came down there to take care of the children. And they went in and they broke into schools, into their cafeterias, and took the food out of their, you know, their freezers and everything like that, took that and cooked it, and that's what they fed the people with. The trucks didn't come down there loaded. They came down there and basically pilfered the schools to feed the people that were caught in that no man's land.
Well, this is the government wouldn't let them leave, and then went and found the rich areas and robbed them and ransacked and took their guns and raped women. That all came out now. And I was being told this at the time by listeners that were there, and I couldn't even believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And it all came out. I mean, who do they have working for this government? It's just a bunch of scum.
Alex, if 10 years ago, people would have heard the conversation that we had the other day and this conversation that we're having right now, they would have thought that we were half a bubble off with one oar underwater, a brick shy of a load of taco short of a blue plate special, and the elevator didn't go to the top and the lights were on. They'd have thought we were not. They would run you off the air and they would have put me out of business if they'd have heard that we were insane enough to have the conversation that you and I just had about.
And now we're not radical enough, some say. You're right. I'm getting on all these AM and FM stations everywhere, and mainstream news is even quoting me now, and it makes me realize, wow, I was right, and it's worse than I thought, and it's not good. I'm not happy. I mean, how bad is this going to get?
I've got a fellow that takes about four different of these news, you know, newsletters, okay? And he feeds me articles and information. That's how I kind of keep up on what's going on. And it's to the point where I can't stand to read some of these things, because I go home at night and I talk to Sylvia and I'm saying, I don't know. It's coming from every direction, and I can't do it. I don't know what to do about it.
It's not just the corrupt government. It's a breakdown of morals. People have gotten lazy. I mean, I'm a hardworking guy, but compared to my dad, I'm nothing. Compared to his dad, I mean, people used to not put up with crap either. So that allows government and corruption to take over. That everybody's so compliant, they let the TSA stick their hands down their pants, and people don't have any pride anymore. And so it just allows the worst to rise to the top, which is what happened in every other civilization. Yeah. We're going the way of Rome, Steve.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Well, you know, the old saying that people get the government that they deserve, when people are no longer willing to fight for their liberty, they will lose their liberty. When people are no longer willing to be independent, come hell or high water. You see, my daddy was 62 when I was born. He was born in 1887.
Wow.
Okay. So I was raised by virtually an old pioneer almost. And those people wouldn't take a loan if you beat them with a stick. They wouldn't take freebies for anything. They were so fiercely independent. They were fiercely self-reliant.
The opposite of domesticated.
That's right. And you see, what happens when you dumb a population down? When you make them weak by making things too easy for them. You know, my daddy was 94 years old, and I was already involved with food supplies and things like that. And we were talking about some of the things that were happening back then, and this was a lot of years ago. And he said, son, the problem with this country is that we've had it too good for too long. You see, in Anoka County in Minnesota, he's the only farmer that went through the Great Depression and kept his farm. He was the only guy. And he used to, when his note came due, he had his herd mortgaged. When his note came due, he'd put on his black suit and lay down on the couch for about a half an hour and just collect himself and then go into and talk to the banker one more time. One more time, and he kept his farm. During the Depression, he sold a whole carload of hogs down to South St. Paul, where Swift & Company was a packing company. He got his commission check from the commission man, and he owed 50 cents for the transportation. He still had 32 hogs left. And so he started to make, Jimmy Dean has whole hog sausage. I think my old man was probably the first guy to have whole hog sausage. He butchered those 32 hogs and made sausage. He had dairy cattle. He made butter from the milk from the Jersey cows. And he had chickens and he had eggs. And two times a week he'd go to Elk River, Minnesota, at Anoka. One was 8 miles, one was 4 miles, and he'd run a sausage, butter, and egg route, and that's how he got through the Depression. The day that he butchered the first hog, he had a hired man working for him, and the hired man walked off the farm, never to come back again, because that was too much work for two men. He did the job himself. You see, that's the kind of people that made this country great.
And now look what we've turned into.
But no. There are still some of them left.
You're right. And they're the enemy. And the New World Order does not like them very much. But expanding on that very eloquent story you tell, imagine 90%, and this is where we should end it, because it's, and I want your take on this, Steve. 90%, a statistical, or some say 89, were agrarian or living in the country during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right at 90% live in the city, and of the 10% that live in the country, only half of them are self-sufficient. So we've gone from 90% somewhat self-sufficient to 10% somewhat self-sufficient.
But let me tell you what we can do with that. If you take this food that has everything in it that we've put into it, you see, most people that are aware of what we're talking about, most people that are looking at us right now, you know, would love to get out of the city, would love to go out and have their little place. They don't have time. They don't have the money. We don't have the economy. But here's what they can do. Take a portion of their income. And they don't have to spend the extra 6 or 7 hours a day after they get done with work coming and hoeing in the garden, then figuring out how to can it or to dry it or do whatever. All they do is take a small portion of their income and they stack up a bunch of these cases like you've got in your garage. You literally have your farm in your garage. The only thing is you don't have to go and plow and dig and hoe and grow those vegetables and figure out how to store them. You've got it there, and it's cheaper than the food you buy in the stinking grocery store. Now you tell me how many of these people living in a stinking apartment can have a 1-year supply or have their own stinking farm there that the product is already harvested and stored from. You tell me.
Steve, I can tell. Steve Schenck, eFoods Direct, I can tell why you're the leader in this, because you really care, and it's passion, and it shines through. But it's clear they're imploding things, they're deindustrializing, they're shutting down the farms, the small family ranches. They're doing everything they can to break us and domesticate us. It's what the TSA is about, all of it. But you're right, because of you and others out there exposing this, I think we have a chance. But I just can't. Lastly, what do you think it'll look like historically, studying this, probably like nobody else has done, if we have a Great Depression now, we're already in the, you know, the beginning throes of one. What will it be like when there's 50 million people in electronic bread lines and the money doesn't work anymore, or it doesn't buy what they need anymore, or there isn't food there? The cities will burn. And then the feds will just sit back and love it and then just come in and then go to the rich areas and take everybody's guns like they did in Katrina. Or if you're trying to get out of the city with your family, they'll sit there and machine gun you. I mean, it's just, what do you do when you've got giant hordes of domesticated idiots on one side who love, you know, American Idol and have no idea which end is up, can't find their butt with both hands, and then a psycho crazy eugenics government? What do you do?
Well, Alex, you just asked me to solve the problem of the entire human race throughout all generations of time and the history of mankind.
No, you're right. So I guess the answer is get back.
How much time do I have to do it?
You got 5 minutes.
No, I'll tell you what. I don't need 5 minutes. If it is to be, it's up to me. And you see, all of the governments, all of the plans, and all the history of mankind comes down to one thing. The divinity of the soul of man. You have within your being the greatness and the magnificence to be who you can become. And if every American chooses to be independent, chooses to take care of themselves, chooses to do the right thing with regard to themselves and their families. You know, very simply, they can do everything they can, but my daddy used to say an interesting thing. The mind that changed against its will is of the same opinion still. No one can make you or me do anything. They can lock us up in prison, but they can't affect our minds. And if every soul that hears the message that you're teaching, if every being chooses to be the best that they can be and take back their liberty by taking responsibility for who they are and what their family does, and never give that responsibility away, then the world will take care of itself.
Wow, well said. So humanity needs to stand up, and we also need to set our will against these tyrants and make that decision, and then everything else flows from that. Thank you so much, Steve Schenck.
Appreciate you.
Wow. See that passion? I've heard him on the radio for many years. years ago, you had a radio show. You used to listen to it here locally. It was syndicated. And, you know, known you for 7-8 years. And then I got the big speech in there the other day. And I'm like, hey, we have got to get him in here. So we stayed an extra day. We didn't even have this planned yesterday. It just happened. And there you go. You got some of the fire I saw. Wow. Steve Schenck, eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for the discounts and the 6 free meals if you want to pay for the shipping to test it out. Whatever you do, folks, get ready. They want to destroy you. They're going to shut the economy off. We've been seized by terrorists. Steve Schenck, thank you very much.
Appreciate you, bud.
And it's the realization these globalists have taken over. You know, they take your money and use it against you. We're just saying, vote with your dollars, support the show, get yourself ready, but just spread the word about the truth. Not just what we're doing, but what others are doing. Infowars.com, PrisonBunny.com, you name it. I tell you, so there you go. Just great interview. And I know it's uplifting. And this life's all a big test. It's all a big challenge. All right, that's it for this edition of InfoWars Nightly News. And we will see you again, Lord willing, back here tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Central at PrisonPlanet.tv and InfoWarsNews.com. Great job to the crew.